You're listening to your MBA podcast with David and Kane. You know, Kane, your boyfriend D'Angelo Russell just had the greatest game of his life, and you didn't watch it.
Yeah, I didn't. I was watching the NFL draft.
This is why the Nets have the worst fans.
What do you mean? The Nets on holidays, so am I, right?
All I hear about D'Angelo Russell is how much you love him, how he's a Net, and you miss out on literally the most significant game of his career.
Nah, I watched the second and third quarter.
31 points, playoff high for D'Angelo Russell.
So what happened at the end? Did the Grizz catch up? Is it overtime? Did Ham forget to use his three? Like he left like three timeouts on the table or something.
Look, I'm really proud of the Grizzlies fighting from 45 point down and finally closing it and losing by 40 points. Good job, guys. Good job.
Yeah, what time did they clear the bench?
Oh, it was bad. LeBron and AD didn't play at all in the fourth quarter. And I think they cleared the bench like 9 minutes or 10 minutes to go in the fourth.
Oof. Because the Grizzlies just like gave up.
Yeah, I gotta ask you, it was kind of strange. It was kind of strange that it felt like the Grizzlies did give up basically in the fourth quarter. Like start of the fourth quarter, just said no more. And I'm not saying that... You know, they're going to come back from 40 point down and win the game. But I do feel like for a young team like this, I'm talking about 21, 22, 23-year-olds, it's kind of a bad look and precedent to set in terms of just giving up start of the fourth quarter when you're the number two seed. You're not going to win, but at least just go out there, right? Be the leader for your team. I thought that was a bit strange. I also texted you in the fourth quarter that I saw Ja on the bench and he was like smiling and having a good time. I was like, what the fuck? This is just a weird look. Triple J and Dylan Brooks on the bench looking, doing their best Cam Thomas impression. Just like, you know, no smile, no expression. And then you got Ja basically like, you know, laughing it up. You got Ja like joking with some player I've never even seen before. Some bench warmer. No can do.
Well, Dylan Brooks is probably sad because he lost down millions of dollars due to his playoff performance. On the flip side, I think D'Lo has played his way into a lucrative contract next season. He's gonna. We were talking last week about he's lost so much money. He had like a couple bad games, but man, like game six clincher elimination at the verge of eliminating the other team. 31 points, that's big time.
Let me read you my boy Dylan Brooks' stats here. 5 for 13, 5 for 14, 3 for 13, 4 for 11, 3 for 15. It's bad enough that he can't shoot. But it's even worse that he's shooting basically 15, attempting like 15 shots a game.
Oh, like we know, they spend the trade deadline trying to get Mikal Bridges, trying to flip... the Mikal Bridges trade that went to the Nets, they were willing to give him, four first-round picks, pick swaps to get Mikal Bridges because they needed a wing player. And you saw, like, today, I'm not saying Kennard's, like, the most important player, but with him out, there's no wing shooter on this team. And that's why they traded for Luke Kennard as well, because they didn't have that sort of 6'7", 6'8", three-point threat that can also have size and defend. It's Dylan Brooks who is going up against LeBron, so he has his hands full. I think he did an okay job, to be honest. All things considered, going against LeBron James, who is angry, he's in playoff mode. He didn't always defend him the best, but it's LeBron James. Like, what can you expect? And Desmond Bain, who was the best scorer on the Grizzlies, but he's like 6'4". With a wingspan of like 5 foot, he can only do so much. So like compared to Mikal Bridges, who's like 6'7", has a wingspan of like 8 feet.
Are you saying Desmond Bane is better off just jumping and trying to block the shot with his head than his arms?
I didn't say that. I didn't say that, but I'm just like, he's a good offensive player for sure. He's got a lot of points in the series. I don't know if Ja played a superstar sort of level series that he should have, like, in order for the Grizzlies to win. But this is the second seed. Like, they should have more than enough parts that if Ja wasn't at his top of the game, there'll be other players like Jaren Jackson, like Desmond Bane, like even Dylan Brooks to step up in, you know, situations here and there to help this team get out of it. It is what it is. Like, Ja didn't have the great series. He was also injured. He got a hand injury, probably affected his shooting. And they didn't have any wing depth. They didn't have any defenders on the perimeter to stop guys from driving in. I think Jaren Jackson also had a pretty good series, but AD was so good. Very, very beast-like AD.
And that's a problem I have with Triple J. Can you be the defensive player of the year when clearly AD is so much better than you, defensively and offensively?
I said this before the series started, that like that the game during the regular season when they played, AD like dominated Jaren Jackson. And this one, like, AD just got back from injury as well. Like, absolutely dominated Jaren Jackson. And by then, he already locked up the defensive player of the year award. But, like, come on, like, who are we kidding? If AD or KD or, you know, any number of these players weren't injured, even LeBron, I think if he wasn't injured and this team had a better record, LeBron would be up for MVP. It's just, I just think these guys are taking care of their bodies in the game right for the postseason, and AD has this mentality that he's not going to, I don't know if he's like fully injured or if he's always injured all the time, or, you know, he's taking time off so he can rehab properly and get ready for the postseason. I assume it's the latter, because he's just like, he looks so fresh. He looks rested. He's engaged. He's just so energized. It's so cool, like, seeing D'Lo connect with AD for alley-oops, and he's just like celebrating with D'Lo. Like, D'Lo's compared to AD is nothing. You know what I mean? Like, AD is was he top 75, like,
yes,
NBA player, sort of thing like that. He's like a very decorated player, and D'Lo is, let's be honest, like a, kind of like almost like a bust sort of player. And the way that he takes on D'Lo, they play up, like, LeBron's like playing up D'Lo as well. Like, it's really good to see how this team and Reeves as well, like the way they trust Reeves to get rebounds, like they clear out, like Reeves grab rebounds and stuff like that and take the ball up and getting into his spots and, you know, screening for LeBron and vice. Like, I think this team is so cohesive, and I'm just it's really cool to see this team just, they literally just got put together at a trade deadline with D'Lo and Vanderbilt, and they're so cohesive, and defensively as well, they're so good at fast breaks aren't the best, but it doesn't matter, because they've got enough good shooters, they've got enough good passes, facilitators to make this team kind of like get some easy buckets. And I just thought that Grizzlies was like really off the game today, like just not defending the lane. Like, the Lakers weren't even shooting that well from 3-point.
I think the Lakers shot something like 12 for 40 something from three, so it wasn't that great. I do agree with you. I do love D'Lo's lobs to AD. I feel like I haven't seen that before. Like, Schroeder doesn't do that. LeBron does that sometimes.
I think I feel like this is the first game that he's really just just automatically connecting with AD on every single pick and roll.
So I do like that part of D'Lo's game, but I mean, he is a terrible player. Let's just be honest. He's terrible at defense. I sent you a video where Adelma, one of the Grizzlies forwards, this slow moving white guy, was driving out of the basket, and D'Lo decided in his infinitely high defensive IQ to try to take a charge while the guy was like literally like 6 feet away. I mean, I'm not saying Adama is, you know, the Flash, but if you're standing still, like, while the guy has 6 feet of space in between you guys, he's going to drive and Euro step around you, right? And that's exactly what he did.
But that was a bad highlight to show, because he got around D'Lo, but then AD was there for the block. That's what team defense is all about.
Which is my point. The only thing saving D'Lo's like humiliating defense is the fact that the Lakers have AD to clean up all the mistakes, right?
They also have Vanderbilt and James, who are all very tall and lean and great shot blockers as well.
Vanderbilt fucking blocked Ja with his like forearm today.
I see Do you see AD's rebounds today?
Nasty.
Like the way he like he just grabs it like one hand and like rips it out of the air.
Even when Jaren Jackson Jr. had like prime position in the post, AD was altering the shot. Triple J is just like, you know, throwing this thing off the backboard, right? And people, whenever they're driving, they get so nervous that AD's in there that it just feels like there's some force field. And when they throw the ball up, it just goes off target.
For sure, like an engaged AD, a healthy AD is better. Like, there's no doubt about that. Like, AD is a much better player than Jaren Jackson. There's like, I don't think anyone is arguing that. It's just that Jaren Jackson was healthy for longer, even though he was injured for like a third of the season. And he had an intense amount of blocks based on the games he played. Like his block rate was incredible. And even in the series, he showed like why he is a great defensive player in a way. He altered a lot of shots he got. He played like free safety a lot of times when people were driving in and thought they got past the guy and Jaren Jackson would come in for the sweep. But like, forget that, because today he was not all there, and maybe Ja wasn't all there, and AD was everywhere, and D'Lo was everywhere, and LeBron was there supporting this team. Because this was like, let's be honest, like after a pretty bad game five, getting blown out. So for them to kind of get back to LA, have this kind of type of game where they were just locked in and just ready to put the Grizzlies past them, I thought it was an excellent game. And it made it seem like it was really easy.
All I know is Jaren Jackson Jr. had 12 blocks this series, and AD had 26.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. No one's arguing that AD is even play with Jaren. He's way better. There's no doubt about that. All I'm saying is that Jaren Jackson is still a great defensive player.
That's true.
We'll see. We'll talk more about the Lakers, I guess, when we'll see who the opponent is, because Kings and Warriors, as of right now, are locked into 3-3 in the series. They're tied up, so it's going to go to game 7.
So let's talk about that series. Did you watch today's game?
Yes, that was the game I watched intensely, yes.
And what do you think of it? I was a bit disappointed.
It was a massive blowout. It was like, it says here 118-99, but it was like a bigger...
And I think that's the disappointing part, because I felt like
At home as well.
But just that the Kings basically took control of the game, I don't know, 10 minutes in, 8 minutes in, and just never let up.
This is crazy. Like, yeah, like they just, every time the Warriors would make any comeback, like just like score 3 points here, 5 points here, the Kings would just straight up score that like themselves. But I don't know. This is a tough series to say. Like, I think they're both pretty evenly matched. They both have their own strengths, and Fox and Steph are like just playing really well. Like, I think Fox is by far the best series, but like, who knows how good Steph could respond in Game 7? Steph and Klay haven't really shown the full ability yet, I feel. And this is Game 7 in the playoffs.
I know they won the one game in Sacramento, but how many games can we expect the Warriors to win in Sacramento?
If it's this, it has to be Game 7 then.
That's going to be hostile environment, man.
I also think like the Kings, even though they're the third seed, I feel like they came into this like with house money. They have the pieces. You know, Fox and Sabonis are locked up, long-term futures. I don't know exactly, like Monk had a great game today, led the bench in scoring. But I think now they're expected to win Game 7 in Sacramento. Like you said, the stadium will be absolutely just feral. They'll just be going nuts. I think there were some pretty good adjustments from Mike Brown as well, because we were like messaging each other, talking about like how Sabonis is getting lost in the paint, and it's like all Monk and Fox kind of like carrying the offense, attacking the basket, getting aggressive, going downhill. And Sabonis is kind of getting lost out there. And then I think like around the third quarter, like Mike Brown changed up the plays they had. And he played a lot higher and played a lot more pick and rolls. And yeah, he missed some easy shots, but I think that's Sabonis's place on this offense. Like on defense, he's good. He's good at rebounding. He's a solid player. He's going to get in front of his players. But on offense, I think if he just hits the paint straight away and just asks for the ball, he gets lost. And you got Wiggins and Draymond and Looney just covering him too well. So let him play high. He's a pretty good 3-point shooter. Let him get confident from the outside. Let him be like more of a triple threat where he can be around the free throw line and pass, dribble or shoot over players. And yeah, and then maybe on the pick and roll you get the mismatch and then you're matched on Steph Curry and then you just go to town on Steph Curry. You know, because Steph Curry had a pretty good game today, but probably his worst defensive game. He just could not stay in front of Fox or Monk.
Well, I'm not sure anyone can.
Well, Fox is unguardable. Yeah.
What's your view on Game 7 then? Who you got here?
I always gotta go for the underdog. I think this. I gotta go for Sacramento.
You think they're gonna take it?
I think the Warriors will take it, but I'm hoping Sacramento win.
He did pick the Warriors in 5. Just to remind you. Way to go for the underdogs.
I might have had a pretty terrible first round picking.
That's a very interesting pick, okay?
I hope the Kings win, but I think the Warriors are going
to
win.
I don't want that to happen because I feel like the Kings can possibly sweep the Lakers. And that's not a joke. Because watching Fox just like scares me to no end.
And can you imagine D'Lo?
Oh God!
trying to God Fox.
No! I want to cry.
Did D'Lo get like, I don't know, turned to stone?
Excuse me, okay. Let me go into the bathroom and turn on the shower.
All right.
Both the Warriors and the Kings are playing at a different speed than the Lakers. The reason why I want the Warriors to win is I feel like the Warriors at least are prone to turnovers and they're at least if like they've got older players where I feel like the Kings can like Fox can just do this round after round and after round.
I think that's the thing too, like Draymond had a bad game today and it just highlights how important he is to this to this team. Like everything he does, like on offense, it runs through him as well. He's a great passer. On defense, if he's not locked in, if he's not switching enough, like where he's guarding the main guy, he also suffers. This team also suffers if Draymond isn't engaged fully. So as much as like you know, if Steph needs to score say 40 and Klay needs to score like say 30, like. Barring that happening, Draymond needs to have this, you know, amazing 10-10-10 kind of game where he's just like his fingerprints are all over every single play.
Especially when you got that bitch Jordan Poole shooting 2-for-11, 1 assist. Ooh, 1 assist. Ooh. What's he doing out there? Tell me what he's doing out there.
Honestly, they shouldn't. I don't know if because like in the series they started starting him. But I think they got to put Gary Payton back on. Just put Gary Payton on Fox all game. Just like what Drew was trying to do with Jimmy Butler. I know it didn't work. But Drew, basically, his job was just to guard Jimmy Butler. I think that's Gary Payton's job. Just let him play 40 minutes. However, whenever Fox is on the court, Payton's on the court. And just guard him like relentlessly.
I think I agree. Like, don't rely on Jordan Poole to be giving you offense. Because he shot 4-for-12 last game, 2-for-11 this game.
Oh, Jordan Poole can come in and sub in for Klay or Steph, and he's going to still be playing like 28 minutes a game, but he's not a starter.
Right.
Don't put him for 30, 40 minutes. Because those moments playing Steph, Klay, and Poole together, it just doesn't provide enough defense. And I know they've been playing small as well.
And he has no skills other than scoring. And when he doesn't score, which is often, then he is totally useless.
What's his contract again? Because like
$90 million.
I think this is why like.
Well, you told me he should get $120 million.
Did he sign $90 million? No, he signed way more than that. What are you talking about? He signed a 4-year, $128 million contract.
Oh, God.
I said D'Lo should sign 90 because Paul and Hero got like over 120. So that's what I'm saying. Like, it's not crazy to think that D'Lo would because he went from 140. Like his max deal after he got traded to the Warriors, he signed like a 130 million dollar deal, and now he's going to go down to 100. I think that's fair for a guy at his skill level, and compared him to Jordan Poole. I know Jordan Poole's younger, But like compare him to what Jordan Poole is doing for the Warriors, and it's like, are we sure? Like, are we sure deal is not worth $40 million less or $30 million less?
All right, who should we talk about next?
I think let's just talk about the matchup in the semis that's happening. Like, by the time it gets released, it'll be Nuggets and Suns. I think they would already, we already know who would have won game one, but maybe we should talk about our predictions, Nuggets and Suns.
Nuggets and Suns, who you got? Who you got?
It's tough. It's really tough, huh? I got Suns in seven.
Interesting. This is tough.
But it comes down to it is tough. I think it comes down to a really, really simple formula.
What? 1 degree to D'Lo? Who's got the who sucked D'Lo's dick before?
Okay, calm down.
You know what I'm talking about. On the boat.
I think Devin Booker is playing his best basketball. Like, it's not Jimmy Butler, like, historic basketball, but it's because he's so in his element now. He's got almost like a Kobe like Zen confidence about him that is like, give the ball to me. It's time. It's time for me to go to work. And yeah, for sure. Like, Clippers were undermanned, and they have KD and Chris Paul was free for most of the night, just like standing on the 3-point line, not doing anything. But I just think Devin Booker against this Nuggets defense. I mean, who are they going to play against Devin Booker? And then if you play your best defensive player, which is, who is that? Like,
Bruce Brown.
Kentavious Caldwell-Pope? Yeah, Bruce Brown, but he comes off, unless they play Bruce Brown on top, but they play Jamal Murray.
KCP, potentially?
KCP probably will, yeah, KCP will probably guard Devin Booker. Then who's guarding Kevin Durant?
Aaron Gordon.
Aaron Gordon, I suppose, but, oh man, I do not think Aaron Gordon...
He's not a good defender.
Oh, Michael, he's decent, but Michael Porter is not a good defender. No, Jokic isn't a good defender. And that's why I think Ayton could hang with Jokic, because yes, Jokic is going to punish Ayton for sure.
Yeah, he's gonna turn into a pretzel.
But I think Ayton's gonna get his points too, because Jokic is a little bit allergic to blocking shots, and that's because KD is not afraid to attack the rim, and Devin Booker, he's not afraid either, man. He's gonna go at the rim, and. I think that, like, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, I think that's enough over Jamal Murray, who's, you know, reinvigorized. Mm. He's feeling it. He's playing really well. And Jokic obviously is unstoppable right now. I think I got to give the edge to KD and Book. But the depth is really good too for the Nuggets. They've got some really good depth that Jeff Green can come in and defend, knows KD, play with KD a few stops in the Supersonics back in the day, and with Brooklyn more recently. Jeff Green's, I think, could do a pretty good job of hanging. And Bruce Brown too. Bruce Brown played with KD against Nets. And I think he will have some say in defending KD in some spots. And yeah, it will probably defend Devin Booker a lot of times as well. So that's why I think it's going to be a tough series. I think it's going to go to seven easily. Like, out of all the other series, so I was just kind of guessing like between six, seven, this for me is a lock. This is going to be like a great series. And I think KD is going to like up his play a little bit, and Devin Booker is still going to be on fire, and Jokic will be on fire.
I think this is a tough series to predict. I've also got seven games, except I picked ultimately the Nuggets to go through. But I can definitely see, obviously, it flipping for in the Suns' favor. I mean, I could even see the Suns winning in six, potentially.
Yeah, I could see the Nuggets winning in six as well, though, just because injuries is a thing. Like, who knows how injuries play a factor as well?
Well, if injury comes into play, then I think the Nuggets has the advantage.
Yeah, exactly. Which team is more likely to get injured, given the depth?
For sure. The Suns, because Jokic has such a game that he doesn't jump at all. Yeah, if MPJ gets injured, I think, you know, obviously that's a con, but they can still handle it. Whereas I feel like Suns, any of those starters get injured, it's game over.
Yeah, that's right. I think like Michael Porter Jr. is injury prone, but if he goes down, like I said, you got Jeff Green stepping up, KCP could step up, Bruce Brown could step in, you know, Aaron Gordon could, you know, play a bigger role. I think there's enough, but you got any of the big four in the Suns getting injured,
it might be over then.
Ayton or Paul. Yeah, there's no one to replace them. Who's going to replace, well, Biombo?
Shamit.
Like, Cameron Payne? Like,
Cameron Payne's not even playing.
Right, so is he injured?
Yeah, he's injured. I don't think he's in this series.
Okay, well, yeah. So it's just like Torrey Craig and then, yeah.
All right, that's the West. Looking to the East, which series do you want to talk about first?
Let's quickly just recap Bucks and Heat, because I think that's, you know, historic upset, 8 seed over 1 seed. And I think when we all watched it, we just thought, oh my God, what a choke job. Like, what was Bud thinking? Subbing out Brook Lopez, and then the resulting play was like a lob to Butler at the ring just at the basket for the game tying shot that went to overtime, and then they ultimately won in overtime to win in 5 games over the number one seed. And then we find out, you know, a couple of days later that in game four, Bud's you know, Coach Bud, his brother, like his older brother, died in a car crash or something. I forgot the exact details. And it's just, it's crazy. Like, can't put things in perspective. Because he had, I mean, yeah, maybe he's not the greatest coach. And, you know, Bucks Reddit has been clamoring for fire Bud for a few seasons now. So it's not the same. It's not like something that would maybe save his job, because he had like a terrible, terrible post any number one seed that gets knocked off by the 8 seed. An 8 seed that, by the way, lost the playoff. They lost a play-in game. They lost the first play-in game to the Hawks, by the way.
Not just lost, they got their ass kicked at home.
And then goes on to beat the Buck, the number one seed. I think is a fireball offense, even if you were Coach of the Year this season. So something's off. It kind of like felt like something's off, because he just had like, it's like these massive rookie brain farts, almost like no coach would ever do.
Maybe if you're David Blatt.
Two timeouts. You have two timeouts in offense. Like, maybe the fourth quarter timeout, 0.5 seconds. Fine. Maybe that's barely okay. But he had two timeouts in overtime, and they were running up the ball, and they only needed 2 points. Like, why not just call a timeout and just set up the play and bring the ball up? Like, that was crazy. But it does put things in perspective that we find out that a family member died, you know, prematurely, of course. So it makes it, you know, just puts like a huge question mark over the season, because was Bud's mindset correct? I assume not, right? Like, having a family, like a brother, die.
Like, right before game four, and they lost the next two. This is... You know, I wish Woj would just stop playing with his dick and do his job, because this is the type of information that we actually need.
He was too busy talking about the Houston Rockets hiring Udoka.
He was too busy working with like the Houston PR office to work on his tweets.
By the way, the source came from Rockets.com, by the way. So, like,
because seriously, this is the type of information that fans and the media both need, because it puts in perspective what we're watching.
Yeah, it's actually team news. This is actually team news, yeah.
Because, you know, what's the narrative? The narrative is like, we're watching this and we're saying, what the fuck's wrong with Bud? Like, he's the most terrible coach ever. He's ruining Giannis. Trade him. Trade Giannis, you know, fire Bud. And not just me, not just like fans, not just haters. I'm talking about the media in general. Everyone's making fun of Bud. And then we find out his brother died before game four, which just puts everything in perspective. It's hard for me to comment on this. I don't think... The only thing I would ask is, in such a situation, assuming that Bud shared this information with the team, and I'm not even sure if he did, Because post-game, I actually sent you a message. I said, watch this Giannis presser. Read between the lines. Because it felt like he was saying the coaching staff was not good enough. We did not make the adjustment. He didn't blame Drew Holiday. That was key in that press conference. He was saying Drew Holiday had to do too much. He had to defend Butler. And he had to rebound. And he had to score. And he had to get assists. We should have given Jimmy Butler more looks, different looks. Maybe I could have guarded Jimmy Butler. We could have tried something else. What's that saying? That's as direct criticism of the coaching staff as you're gonna get from a player.
Yeah, I was like texting you like by game three or something. Like they got to change up the defensive strategy because Drew Holiday, yes, he's an elite perimeter defensive player, but he is not making a dent in Jimmy Butler. Like he was the guy that was guarding Jimmy Butler when he scored 56 points. You know, like if someone's scoring 56 points on you, I think you might have to rethink your defensive strategy and maybe double team him more, maybe switch Giannis like on him more, because it wasn't making an impact. And I know like they were like joining each other and it's like a pride thing and ego thing, and Drew Holiday is like, no, I got this coach and you can trust me, coach. But at some point, the coach has to make the decision here. And maybe seeing a guy...
Drew wasn't even saying that. Who knows if Drew was saying. Drew was probably saying, boy, what the fuck are you doing? I can't guard this man. He's fucking taunting me. I told the rest. The rest aren't helping. But do something. Put Giannis on
switch
him.
Me.
Help.
Switch me
help.
Up. Put Grayson on. Put Grayson on him. Let him trip him a little bit.
Let Grayson kick him. He's hurting me. He's hurting me. Help. But fucking there, catatonic, drooling over himself.
Which is why I agree with this Woj criticism, because us as, we're not media, but like us as fans watching the game, we're just going to be blaming the coach making these decisions. Like, what are you doing? Like, why aren't you making these calls? Why aren't you doing this and that? And compounds the issue when we see obvious mistakes, like not calling a timeout at the end of games when you have a chance to set up the team. And then this news comes out when it would have been great information for the fans that are...
It's not just us criticizing, but like the whole narrative.
Yeah, media is like saying like he's going to be fired, and you know, like it's like the news about him being fired is heightened now because the media is starting to ask for it as well. Like, how can you can still employ a coach, head coach that makes these bad mistakes and also loses against an 8th seed? It's only happened like 6 times in the history of the NBA. So extremely fireball offense. And the media is right to ask these things, but it puts it into the context when you have insiders that can actually do the job and let us know that some personal family issues happened that affect that. I you must probably acknowledge that affected his, you know, his mindset, his games going into this and his like thinking going into playoff basketball, like, okay, should I commit to which he ultimately did? Should I commit to basketball? Should I commit to my job? Or should I be there with my family?
The reason why this is important is because, do you think Bud appreciated all the hate that was coming his way? Not from us necessarily, right? Because he doesn't know us. We have no way of reaching Bud. I guess I could get in contact with Adam Silver and have him relay my messages, my feelings. But short of that, I have no direct relationship with Bud. But the media was also criticizing Bud. So not only does he have to face this humiliating defeat and the fact that he fucked up and the fact that he has this family tragedy, now he has to face all this backlash from the media, creating this narrative that he's no good. When in fact, if we had known, then at least people will leave him alone. It would have been still a disappointing end to the season, but at least the narrative wouldn't be that it's all his fault. And I guess we can argue, look, it took 2 days, but now it's out. I think now people will appreciate it and lay off him. We don't even have to say, like, did it affect him? Of course it affected him. Of course.
Yeah. So, okay, well, the Heat advance. Jimmy Butler is great. Tyler Hero is injured. I don't know how much longer Tyler Hero is out for. Like, I would assume, like, he would probably be out until, like, the finals. Cause
probably.
Like, a broken hand. I don't know if he needs surgery or not, but that's...
He has surgery already.
Right. I mean, the plus side, you know, now that the Heat are versing the Knicks is Duncan Robinson. He played a lot of minutes, played some decent critical minutes as well in the fourth. Defense suspect, but offense gives, you know, gives a little bit of offense that like Tyler Hero can do. It's like the other role players though. Like Bam was a zero, like you said, but Bam at least gives you defense and defensive rebounding. But Gabe Vincent, Martin, just massive players up coming off the bench.
I've got ultimately the Knicks advancing in seven.
Oh, in seven. Okay. So you do think like it will be a very close series then?
Just because this is a cop-out pick, I don't really know. Like, for all I know, the Heat could sweep the Knicks or the Knicks could sweep the Heat. I just feel like the variance on these two teams is so great.
Yeah.
You know, on one hand, you can argue that Jimmy Butler, he has some great games, maybe he slows down. But then at the same time, I saw in the bubble, like Jimmy Butler basically wins series after series after series. For whatever reason, he can't shoot in regular season. And then playoff time, he just goes banana.
I picked the Heat in seven because I think it comes down to how great Jimmy Butler can actually be. And I think Jalen Brunson's playing great. Like, it was clear, like, the Knicks won any deal, free agency deal, when it came to choosing between. I mean, obviously they chose Donovan Mitchell, but when that trade couldn't happen because the Jazz were being too stubborn, then they pivoted to plan B. And fortunately for them, it worked out better because Jalen Brunson is the better player. Let's be honest. Jalen Brunson was great, but it's a depth. RJ Barrett came along. I think RJ Barrett's like a really critical player for this series and could actually be defending Jimmy Butler in pinches. Like, they're going to be switching on him, but I think RJ Barrett actually might be the most capable starter to defend Jimmy Butler. But having said that, if Jrue Holiday, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Chris Middleton, Bobby Portis, Brook Lopez, if they had no chance getting like beating Jimmy Butler, I doubt an injured Julius Randle, like a Swiss cheese of a man of Mitchell Robinson, and RJ Barrett is going to have any chance against Jimmy Butler. And that's why I also think Bam is going to feast as well. But really comes down to the role players. Like, is Struce going to have a big series? Vincent going to have a big series? Or is it going to be RJ and Josh Hart and quickly having the more important role playing supporting play? Because Brunson's going to get his points, Butler's going to get his points, Bam's going to get his stuff. Randall, if he's healthy, is going to do his thing. I think it's those other guys that have needed to step up. And maybe I'm just picking against you because like I'm down against you in the picks. But I also think Jimmy Butler could be on it. And if they beat the first seed, the Bucks, then they should have they shouldn't have any problems against fifth seed, the Knicks.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it is telling you pick seven games, so you aren't.
Knicks are a better team for sure. Because like you said, there's so much variance in how the Heat play, where Jimmy Butler is a terrible regular season shooter and it becomes unmissable in the postseason. There must be some mean between that. Some laws of averages between that. But maybe that's not in the semis. Maybe that'll happen in the finals or something.
Okay, the last series we've got here is the 76ers against the Celtics.
Is Harden back from Las Vegas, right? I think he's partying right now in Las Vegas.
Oh my God, Jesus Christ, he can't.
Sweeping the Nets. I'm serious.
I saw that on, because Woj can't do his job. I have to go to TMZ.
Or TMZ, we know how the real report is.
So, of course, you're referring to over the weekend. And while I was thinking, okay, maybe the fact that the Sixer has so much free time, does that mean like Harden's like getting extra treatment? He's getting an extra shots. He's in the gym.
He's getting extra treatment, right?
Yeah.
He's very hands-on.
And then we see a video of James Harden outside some strip club in Las Vegas slapping his buddies.
We don't know it's a strip club.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, some establishment. Sometime nighttime establishment. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It was in the hospital for sick children at like 3 a.m. in the morning.
For all we know, James Harden might be selling timeshares or something as a side
thing. Like, seriously, man. I mean, this guy is not in the best of shape. He looks like he has no like lift, he can't drive anymore, and rather than recuperating, he's fucking out there sucking on tits at 3 a.m. in Vegas. So, I mean, what the fuck's wrong with this man? Like, seriously, I want this to be a competitive series. I don't want to see the Celtics fucking...
I think it'll be a competitive series.
You think it's competitive?
I got the Celtics in 5. No, I got Celtics in 6.
Okay.
But I think it's less to do with James Harden, who I think can give you like 20 and 10 basically. I think it's Joel. Joel is in a knee brace. He has a sprained MCL or some kind of knee ligament. That's not good. I think if he's in any type of pain, it's going to limit his physicality. And it's not a good chance. It's not a good time to be injured when you're versing the most physical team in the league. Like, yeah, maybe Robert Williams and Al Horford are not as tall as Joel Embiid. And Joel Embiid's going to get his points, don't get me wrong. But it's going to wear on him. Like, yeah, they got lucky past the Nets in 4. Because if the Nets even gave any challenge at all, Joel Embiid would have been out longer, and then who knows what would have happened. Because that's the type of luck you need if you're like a team like the Nets. You need a big time injury to Joel or James Harden to be away and for you to take advantage. But because they got swept, they didn't even get a chance to take advantage of Joel Embiid's injury.
Yeah, the problem with going against the Celtics is that they've got Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum.
Like 1A, 1B.
1A, 1B, and these defenders are going to make you work. And that's an issue.
Oof. I think Smart would definitely guard Harden, in my opinion.
And they've got Derek White. In fact, they're playing Derek White like above Smart now.
Yeah, I'll probably play Derek White against Maxey.
But I'm not even sure how much difference it makes, because Harden's not really driving. At least he wasn't in the first round. Like, he doesn't really have any explosion anymore.
Harden shot really well against the Nets there. And Maxey was fucking like... on fire against.
Yeah, I think Maxey is the X factor.
But it'll come down to earth. It'll come down to earth again. Definitely against the Celtics D.
I picked ultimately the Celtics in 7, but that's this is one of the picks where I'm more. I don't want to see the Celtics like basically win in 5. Yeah. All right, to wrap up, Kane, the conference finals now set, and we say goodbye to the Milwaukee Bucks and the Memphis Grizzlies. Bucks fans and Grizzlies fans, just because you're no longer in the playoffs does not mean you've failed. Actually, I don't know where this joke is going. I just want to say, look, it's not all so bad. Ja can finally do what he loves to do, which is go to the malls and wave guns at kids.
Well said. See you then, brother.
All right. See ya. Thank you for listening to Your NBA Podcast with David and Kane. If you enjoyed our show, please tweet us at Your NBA Podcast.